We're going to start now. This is James Newberry, and I'm here with Frances Juanita Carter on Thursday, February 18th, 2021. We're on Zoom, and Dr. Carter is online from her home in Glen Arden, Maryland. So I want to thank you for speaking with me today. Do you agree to the interview?
Yes, and you're welcome, sir.
Thank you so much. So tell me what's your full name?
All right, that was an interruption. Okay.
So tell me, what is your full name?
My full name is Frances Juanita Carter.
And what's your birth date?
March 14, 1937.
And what were your parents' names?
Geneva and Harold Carter.
And what did they do for a living?
My father was a foreman at the Atlanta Steel Company, and my mother did domestic work.
Do you have any siblings?
Yes, I have one sister who is still alive and one who is deceased.
And what were their names?
Harriet and Diane.
And where did you...
Until they married.
I see. Where did you grow up in Marietta?
I grew up on Shepherd Street. At that time, it was Shepherd Street, Woods Drive. It is Woods Drive now. At that time, it was Shepherd Street.
And who were your neighbors, the people in your community?
My neighbors were Catherine Grady and the Colemans, Rushi Coleman, Doc Christian, Sam Goldston, and the Clarks.
And who did your family socialize with?
All the neighbors and the churchgoers.
Mm-hmm. Where did you attend church?
I attend church at Mount Zion Baptist Church, which is right up the street from me. I could look out the kitchen window almost into the church.
You get a lot of phone calls, don't you?
Yes, I do. I have godchildren that think they must call me every day, and my friends, of course, every day.
Well, can you describe Marietta in the 1940s and 50s for me, what it was like at that time?
In the 40s and 50s, Marietta was a segregated place, but we all got along very well. Not any confusion, because I remember when they integrated the schools, there were no problems at all. The Blacks were on one side of the world and the whites were on the other side of the country. Okay, a segregated place, but a friendly place.
So when you talk about whites being on one side, Blacks being on the other, how much interaction did you have with white people, and where did you interact with them, if at all?
We interacted with them. If you worked for them, that was the interaction. All right. If you worked for them, that was about the interaction. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned your mother.
I put it this way, too. They were very friendly to work with.
And you mentioned that your mother was a domestic.
Right. Even after she no longer worked with them, they still visited us. She always got very large gifts from them for all occasions. Mm-hmm. And they are all dead now. Like I said, it was a friendly world. If you worked for them, they were good to you. As a matter of fact, when I was growing up, I grew up with one of my mother's worker's daughters because she said, bring her to work with you so she can play with Anne, with her daughter.
And what was the family's name?
Which, the one with whom she worked?
Yes, ma'am.
Cosman.
I see.
The Cosman. And she worked with the Jacksons and finally with the Bullets. As a matter of fact, when he was on his sick bed, almost his deathbed, he told him, please bring my mother to see him.
What was the last?
It was a friendly world.
And what was that last family's name again?
The last family?
The last one you mentioned?
The Bullocks.
I see.
They were the ones who just died. Anne just died, I think, last year. The Bullocks.
Okay.
And whenever I visited Marietta, my mother always, we always had to visit them. When Juanita comes home, be sure you come up to see us. It was that kind of world.
So where did you do your shopping, or where did your parents do their shopping for groceries and other things?
On the grocery store and on the square. And believe it or not, some of the stores where we shopped were the ones where the Blacks shopped predominantly.
Where were those?
You probably never heard of it before. The Piggly Wiggly was one of the stores. If you say that to most of the people in Marietta now, the younger generation, they don't even know that name. Mm-hmm.
Where was the Piggly Wiggly?
And I'll tell you something else. You did a lot of shopping from the Blacks who had guards and what have you. And they came in with their groceries and fruits and vegetables on weekends. And we did a lot of our shopping with them. As a matter of fact, my grandfather was one of those people who had his big farm out there, and he came in with his fruits and vegetables. Oh yes, and I lived there in the time of rationing. You know, the younger generation wouldn't know anything about that. You got your little tickets to get you 5 pounds of sugar to last you for 5 years. That's a joke, but you didn't get very much with your tickets.
Was that during the war?
You know, I guess so. I don't know. Remember, I was young. I didn't know whether they were shooting or what they were doing then, but I know food was rationed. So I guess it was a war, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you mentioned your grandfather bringing in like fresh vegetables.
Right.
Where did he come? Where did he like park his truck, or, you know, his
vegetables? They had wagons then, remember? Look, Mr. James Newberry, you probably don't know anything about the horse and buggy and the wagons, do you?
Not very much, no.
Because I saw you a minute ago. I can't see you now, but you're very young. And they came in on with their mules, as they call them, and their wagons. Mm-hmm.
And where would they set up to sell their produce?
Oh, they would ride around through the neighborhood. You were there waiting for them to come in on Saturday. Mm-hmm. They came through the neighborhood. Remember, we had minimal living places, the streets and what have you, like the projects, Baptist Town and Lemon Street. There were certain places where Blacks lived, so they didn't have really that far to travel. I guess you would say we lived on the east side of Marietta. Mostly on the east side. And you know where Lemon Street is because you're working with them now, right?
Right.
Well, where they built all those new homes, those were the projects. And
right.
That was where many, many, many Black people lived. In fact, that's where all of my friends were.
So did your parents own their house?
Yes, mm-hmm. We always did. Uh-huh.
Okay, so who were some of your friends who lived in the Fort Hill Homes projects?
You want to hear some of those names?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. The Bartletts, the Freemans, the Moons, because he was the principal of the elementary school, Mr. Moon, at one of those times. Let me see. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Freemans, the Moons, everybody lived there. Any name I would come up with probably lived there.
And I know that the Fort Hill homes, they had indoor plumbing. It was they were considered fairly nice, right? Sort of middle class.
Yes. Mm-hmm. When we started out on Shepherd Street, which is now Woods Drive, we didn't have inside plumbing at that time. I remember dancing down the steps every day to the little outhouse that we shared with the Grady's, Cat Grady, who lived next door to us. And, you know, as time went on and look, times got better, we managed to get inside plumbing. But as a little girl, I remember going down those steps to the outhouse, as they were called.
And can you describe your home? How, like the rooms, how big was it?
Well, when we moved in that house, there were three rooms. And would you believe that the Williams, you asked the names of families, Cogan Williams, as a matter of fact, he was 98 or 9 years old. Would you believe he and his wife lived with us? In that three-room house, people shared their homes no matter what the condition or how much space. It was a better world in those days. I loved growing up there. Like I said, it was a friendly place. And they lived with us in that three-room house.
Did you travel at all? Did you go out of town anytime?
You mean when I was coming up young?
Yes, ma'am.
No, we didn't travel very much. Remember now, that was in the good old poor days, as people call it, because I told them I was never poor, really. If you didn't have a car, you didn't know anything about having a car. I remember when we got a television, everybody came to our house to watch the TV because we shared everything. Nobody had that much. So we didn't really travel much. Mm-mm.
How did your parents get to work?
You know, those who had cars or managed to buy cars shared them, or they went on the bus. You know, the mode of transportation, we've always had buses. You walk to the bus station and catch the bus. Mm-hmm.
And did you have any relatives who lived in other parts of the country, maybe up north?
Yes, my uncle Morris lived in Detroit and Aunt Tuesday. Mm-hmm. But in those days, we didn't, as I was a young child coming up, we did not visit them. But when I got older and when we became affluent, you like that term I use?
I do.
When we became affluent, we would visit them in Detroit, Michigan.
So at what point was that? When were you becoming affluent?
Use the word affluent. I like that word. Whatever we had made us affluent, all right?
I understand. At what point were you able to make those trips?
I was in my early teens, and we would go to Rockmart, Georgia. We had relatives there, and we would go, well, as we became affluent, I like that word for us, we managed to get a car. And so we could travel. And I had an aunt, the Waits, Roland and Mary Waits. Okay. And he had a car. And that was in the days when we shared everything. And Uncle Roland could not read anything. He could travel anywhere. I don't know how he read the signs or directions or anything, but he could go anywhere.
And where did Roland and
they wife... lived out in what was called the racetrack. At that time, it was called the racetrack out on Haley Street in Marietta.
I see.
And the Durhams, lived out there at the racetrack, not far from Woods Drive. And the Durhams, the Waits, the Campbells, that was one of the main strips where I would say that the affluent ones lived, because my uncle had a car. Okay.
And tell me about starting.
Are you looking at me laughing as you asking me these questions?
No, it's the
I'm
video.
Enjoying this.
I am too. Event. So tell me about starting school.
Well, I started school ahead of time because I grew up with boys. The neighborhood had all boys in the neighborhood. That's why how I learned to fight, because I had to fight my way through. And of course, when my uncle went to school, I would scream and yell every day. So my mother talked to his first grade teacher. She said, send her on to school with them. It's okay. Like I said, we lived in a friendly world then. So I went to school ahead of time. Remember, there were no daycares then. People kept each other's children. And so I went to school with my uncles to school ahead of time. That's why by the time I got to school, I had finished first and second grade. I was a repeat.
So were you about 5, 6 years old?
Yeah, 4 and 5, because you know, we began school at 6. So I was 4 and 5, a little thing. That's why I guess I was really alert by the time I got in school, and they should not have let me go too early.
Why not?
I was head of everybody, and I was tearing up the classroom because I already knew that.
So were you bored?
No, I was just bad. And of course, I skipped a couple of grades because I remember I went from, 3rd to 5th and 5th to 7th or somewhere. And so they were moving me around. You know, they didn't have these advanced classes for Blacks and all of that then, because we used the books that they no longer wanted, with pages missing and everything. And so that didn't bother me any.
Was that something that you were aware of at the time? I mean, did people just accept it, or did they complain about it? What was the situation?
May I say this to you? You accepted things as they were, all right? Way back when, remember, they were not having civil rights marches, all right? And Blacks fighting for what we knew that we should have had. That was before that time when I grew up, all right? That was before that time. And you kind of accepted your way of life. Like I say to you, I don't remember being disgruntled or unhappy growing up. I had a happy childhood over on the east side where the Blacks live, all right? Does that sound strange to you?
No, it's something that's come up a lot. That
Yeah, that was a way of life, and you accepted that as it was.
Did your parents ever, did they follow the news? How did they keep up with the news?
Well, we had radios, and believe it or not, my father went to 7th grade, I think. But he was smarter than I was in the 12th grade. And my mother, like when she finished school, she was the valedictorian of the class. I was veiled when I finished. My sister was valedictorian. So we were fairly smart people. And the greatest next door, Treville, as a matter of fact, I talked with her last week. She stays in touch. She helped to integrate the schools because, of course, they wanted the bright Blacks. And so we were pretty intelligent.
What can you tell me about Trevil?
We had our radios during that time before the TV.
I know that Trevil was the first, along with Daphne Delk.
Daphne Delk and Trevil Grady. That was the one I was talking to just last week. Mm-hmm.
And where does...
Those who are still around still keep in touch with me, okay?
And where does Trevil live?
My young children. Oh, please. That's one of my godchildren. Please excuse me. I'm hanging up. All right. I'm back.
Where does Trevil live now?
Oh, Trevil is in Duluth, Georgia.
I see.
And she stays in touch with me, too. Mm-hmm.
Well,
and
I
the Sextons. Have you met Isla? Isla, she's not a Sexton now.
I haven't.
Uh-huh. I don't know why, because she's very popular around there in Marietta.
If you need to answer the phone, feel free.
No. I'm not going to do that. If I don't answer and hang up, they think something is wrong. Now, this one that's calling me now, I taught her when I first came here and started teaching back in the 60s, and she's still in my life.
Wow.
That's the one who's calling me now. And I had a student that I taught 100 years ago. Let me see, is that one? And that's Michelle. She's still calling me. And I just got this huge box of candy and a card like I've never seen. That was a student that I had when I taught in Washington. That was back in the 70s. Okay, and they are still bothering me. No, I'm serious. I got this huge box of candy. Is it all right if I...
Go ahead and answer.
Hold on 1 minute. Good morning, daughter. Nothing is wrong with my phone, Michelle. I'm on a Zoom call. I'll call you back when I finish, okay? All right. Did you hear what she said? What's wrong with your phone? You see what I mean?
That's persistent.
What does that tell you? Look, Dr. Newberry, what does that tell you about me as a teacher? That's been calling this 4 or 5 times back in the 60s.
That says it all.
Okay. And the other one, the candy, that was the 70s. Yes, I don't know. Anyway, I'm back with you. I'm enjoying this.
So describe the elementary school building, the wooden building that you went to.
It was just as raggedy as it could be. But I loved going to school there. It was two-story. I remember the steps. You could go up either side up to the second level, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the floors are around in a circle. I can just visualize it. If I had to draw a picture of it, it would be an exact replica of that school. An exact replica, because I remember it that well.
What do you mean by raggedy?
You know what raggedy means, James Newberry. It was an old building. It was clean, and okay, they painted it, far off. But it was just an old wooden building.
Okay. And
we enjoyed going to school there. I mean, we were children. We liked our teachers. And they would slap us around, and it was okay.
So what was the discipline?
But this was good. It was good. Remember now, that was back in the day. The parents knew the teachers. The teacher's home was right around the hill from me. And the parents were invited teachers to dinner and what have you. It was a friendly world. I told you my first grade teacher always took me home with her on the weekend. She would tell my mother, "Hey, I want to eat a red. I'm taking her home with me weekend." This was a happy place.
What was that teacher's name?
Harriet Baines. She lived on Houston Street in Atlanta. There's some things you just never forget.
And
down the street from Howard, what was that, Howard High School in Atlanta, Georgia. We could walk up to the school from her house. Harriet Baines.
So that was time you spent out of town in Atlanta.
Right, but remember now, you can almost walk to Atlanta. So you call that out of town, Mr. James Newberry? Was that out of town?
I wouldn't walk it. It's a little far for me.
I really like talking to you. We could walk it together.
Did you take the bus or did she have a car?
Oh, yes. She had a car. Remember now, if you were a teacher, you were affluent. We're not going to let that word get away from us, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Where had she gone to school?
Looking at me.
Ms.
Are
Bain.
You still looking at me?
I can see you.
Okay. I want to see you. What can I do to see you?
Well, there's a little button that says view.
It says what?
View. And it gives you an option for a speaker view or a gallery view. If you click on gallery, you can see me.
But I can't see that right here. It's just telling me what's going on. Francis is speaking as if I don't know I'm speaking. I mean, it's telling me, so that's okay. And maybe before you leave me today, we can figure out a way for me to see you again. So when I come to Marietta, I can look you up.
Yes, I think for the interview, you're the feature.
But I prefer that you see me. Okay. Now.
Yeah, we'll adjust it.
More questions.
We'll adjust at the end so that you can see me.
All right. You heard what I said. I'm ready for some more questions. I'm enjoying this.
Well, I've got several pages worth.
That's all right. And I have plenty of time. How much time do you have?
Oh, I've got about an hour. We'll be good.
We will utilize every second of that hour, okay?
Okay.
Let's go.
Tell me what you learned. What were the subjects you were studying in school?
Well, all the way through school?
Elementary.
Let me tell you about the schools back then. You know, now students can be selective. We took everything. You know, your chemistry and biology and English, all your sciences, typing. When you came out of high school, everybody could type. You took all of the classes. And I thought that was excellent. Took everything. Mm-hmm. And I was in on everything too. I tried to figure out a way to blow up the chemistry lab and everything. We took everything and enjoyed everything.
Do you remember the principal at the elementary school?
Let me see, Aaron Adams. I might have gone out of elementary school by the time, but Aaron Adams. Have you heard his name while you were interviewing?
Yes, David ma'am.
Was one of the principals there. I don't know whether I was still there or not.
What about Professor Woods?
Oh, I knew him very well. He worked me to death. Mr. Woods lived right around the corner from me, remember? That's why the street became Woods Drive.
Right. How did he work you to death?
And he knew that I was outrageous, so he would always find something for me to do to keep me busy. At the end of the school year, you know, the teachers had to make sure that their roll books and everything tallied. And he would come and tell the teacher, let that Juanita come in my office and check my books for me. You know, mathematically, of course, to keep me busy. And we all liked him very much. Mr. Wood. Like now, I said, he was my neighbor.
Right. Was this when you were a student that you were checking his books, or was that as a teacher?
Yes, I was a student.
So you were just very, precocious?
I guess I was, because Mary Jane Fred, my English teacher, I would teach her classes. She would hide. She would say, look, come in, Juanita. Today we're going to do, you know, personal pronouns or something, whatever. She said, you teach that for me. I would teach her class. Mm-hmm. They would keep me busy. Mm-hmm. Of course, after I had finished school, gone to college, had come back to Marietta, when I was here, taking teacher courses, the teachers would call on me to teach something for them when the students didn't seem to get it. And she would call me to her desk and say, look, I'm tired of trying to teach them that, but you go and explain this to them. I said, yes, ma'am. I was a teacher then. Yes, ma'am.
So what did Miss Fred do while you were teaching her class?
Oh, she would just be at the desk chilling. I mean, she knew I knew what I was doing.
So tell me about the...
And Mr. Scott, have you talked with him? Lewis Clive Scott was our history teacher.
Yes, I almost got an interview, but he decided not to a few days before.
Oh, and you didn't speak with Lewis Clive Scott?
No, I spoke with his niece.
He was the love of the school.
I know.
Crazy.
I'm still trying.
You know what I said? I nearly drove him crazy.
How did you do that?
I was into everything. And then he had the nerve to tell somebody I was the smartest student he ever had. I said, you're just telling a story on me. I did everything I could to drive him up a wall. One day he was getting ready to come into class and I could control the students, okay? I said, we're gonna fill up. We had gotten some new chairs and you know, they packed them with the straw. I said, we're gonna pack all of his desk drawers. So when he opens the drawer, the straw would jump up at him. They were rushing to get all the drawers stuck. So when he came in, everybody was so quiet, just sitting there. He said, all right, let me check the roll. He snatched the drawer and the straw jumped up. He was snatching, straw was going everywhere. I know who did this, that Juanita Carr. I know who did it. He was right. Nobody said anything. We was just looking. He said, I'll just punish the whole class since you won't tell on. That's how I sought to drive him crazy. I loved him very much.
Can you tell me about his teaching style and his personality?
Mr. Scott, let me tell you, he would come in there with that and reach on that board and he filled up every board. As he talked, he wrote. So you didn't miss anything, because if he was talking too fast, he was on the board. Excellent teacher. The teachers were very good. Mr. Roth, excellent. He taught chemistry. And then I ended up teaching with him. We were co-workers. He was, all the teachers were very good.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of them had, master's degrees.
Oh, yes, indeed. And the Carmichaels, Alfred and Stafford and James, William and Joe. I grew up with them. They lived next door to us on Holiday Street. And I talked with Stafford at Lemon Street. Bright. So when they were giving the tests for teachers, I always found a way to make us seem lesser than the whites, of course. So we decided after the staff, I said, we're going to show them up when they give this teacher's exam. And of course we did. I said, let's show them how intelligent we are. And we did just that. But the ones who were bright in those days were very bright. Jenny Hill was one of them. You've talked with Jenny Hill. She's deceased now, you know.
Yes.
Uh-huh. She's very bright, very bright.
And when was that test you mentioned? Were you teaching?
That was the teacher's exam where they would give when I was teaching in Marietta. they would give the tests to show that we were dumber than anybody else, which was not true.
Did they reveal the results? I mean, how did that come out?
Oh yeah, they would show the results. And it just made them understand that we were a little smarter than they knew. But you had to take that test. Of course, I had to take it back in those days when I finished college. We had to take a teacher's exam. I don't know for what reason. I guess they wanted to know if we had learned anything, if we were ready to go to work, right?
So can you tell me?
I'm going to ask you, you probably know you're younger than I am. You asked me my age. What's your age? Anyway, we have student teaching. Do they have that now, Mr. Newberry?
You mean like student teachers, like in training?
Yeah, the student teaching where you had to go out and teach before you enter the classroom.
Right, and they're called like pre-service teachers.
Oh, they still have it, right?
They do. Yeah, you have to do I think it's called a practicum, and they go out and
practicum, right. They call the student teaching then, but they still do it, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. I don't think
I remember that very well.
Without it.
I was in Waycross, Georgia.
So you went down to a school in Waycross?
I went to Savannah State, and they sent you somewhere near. So Waycross, Georgia is near Savannah. And so I went to Waycross, Georgia.
And how long was that period of time?
The student teaching?
Yes.
Were there like, I guess you would call it a quarter maybe. Because when I got there, Miss Gaines, her name, she stayed in the classroom with me a couple of days and left me. She dropped by. She said, I went on home and wherever I had to go, she said, you didn't need me here. She said, you could teach me something. I said, oh, really? I said, how did you decide that? She said, you see that little fella who sits right in front of your desk? Say, he sat all the way in the back of the class. He wouldn't do any work, wouldn't do anything. She said, when I walked through that door and saw him sitting almost in your face and doing his work, she said, I knew you had that it. I said, what is that it? She said, whatever teacher needs to teach anybody. I said, oh, thank you. And she went on about her business again.
Wow.
So she didn't really do, she just watched me a couple of days, and then she would drop by once in a while, stay in there with me a minute and see what was going on. Mm-hmm. And that was when I was doing my practicum, as you called it.
So let's go back then to high school, when you were still in high school. I want you to, one of the things that I've asked a lot of former students and teachers is to describe the layout of the high school building. Can you do that for me?
Of the layout of the high school building?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, you want to hear the layout?
I do.
How the classes were, where they were? And all of that?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. You would enter the front door. And unlike me, I'd enter any way I wanted to. You would enter the front door. If you go to the left, there was the principal's office. Mr. Woods and later Sullivan Ara Ruff. You would continue past the office, that first room there where you could look out and see the projects where the Black folks live was my English class. You would go next door to me, and there was the chemistry lab where Mr. Ruff taught when he was there as a teacher. And then you would go on around the hall for reading, math, and then there were those rooms were to the left, those two rooms. To the right with windows where you could look out to the open court. Then you would go down the steps, and when you get down the steps, immediately in front of you was the gymnasium where I taught. My cheerleaders, my drama club, helped Mr. Adger with the girls' basketball team. and my dance group in everything in the world. That's where I ended up once I, you know, was there teaching. And the other side was Identica. You would come down that hall, and of course, there were two classes on that side, and you would proceed and down the steps, and that side would take you to one side of the gym. The other side of it took you to the other side. And of course, you could go out the doors, out of the gym into that open court where two, when you come down the hall on the right side, oh yes, when you enter the school on the front, when you took that right, there was the teacher's lounge. All right, where the teachers were hanging out when I was a student there, and then I ended up hanging out in there as a teacher. And Miss Fred, the teacher for whom I taught whenever she just didn't feel like it, I don't guess. She was a very large lady. I guess she was tired and could really play the piano. She was our music teacher, blah, blah, blah. Her body would feel the full piano stool. Anyway, and you go on down that hall on the right-hand side, Mr. Wilson. That was his, he was a math teacher. He was right next to Miss Fred. Am I remembering that?
It's pretty spot on, it sounds like.
As a student, I know exactly. I said I could draw a picture of it and put the teachers at their desk and go right on down. And that right-hand side would take us out to the football field, okay? Where I went on many days because I would be slipping out that door going up to the store the street and trying to sneak back in the building. All right, anything else you need to know?
What were you going to get from the store?
There was a little store up there, had some goodies, some cookies and some candy and some sodas. And sometimes I would go out that side door and go out there on the bleach, just into everything, happy all the time.
So what kind of extracurricular activities?
That's why I'm telling you, we had some of everything. We had the speaking class, you know, the speaking group. Like I said, I had a dance group. We had a library club, all kind of activities that we could help the students to grow. For our home economics, Mrs. Watson was my home economics teacher. Oh yes, when you came down those steps on each side, on the right-hand side, you would go down to the home economics room and the cooking room. That was down on the lower level. Are you with me?
I am.
I have described the school right. Well, she was the home economics teacher, and so we would have modeling classes, some of everything. As a matter of fact, Ms. Watson lived right up the street from me, too. And, of course, I had to help her, too. Whenever she would come to class making her a garment, come here, I need to make my belt, put my zipper in. And she wanted to know, how can you put in a zipper without basting it? Now, she's the home economics teacher, could really, really sew. I said, well, my mother sews. I watched her. She said, I've never seen anybody just zip a zipper in there. And, you know, I told you I could just do some of everything. So I'd help my home economics teacher. She had me doing her belts and her zippers. And I never participated in a modeling show. I don't know why I want to. After I finished helping everybody sewing, that I watched them model. Was I awful, Mr. James?
What was that?
Was I awful?
No, it sounds like you.
I was outrageous, wasn't I?
You sound like the most talented.
Well, I could do some of everything. When I had my cheerleaders, I took my sewing machine to school, and while I was down, because I told you I taught physical ed, book, taught everything, French, physical ed, English, whatever, and while they were out there playing ball or whatever, I would be making their uniforms. I made my cheerleaders' outfits, they were the sharpest cheerleaders in the area.
And what were the colors?
Blue and white, blue and gray, blue and white. I remember the last ones I made them that you could wear them, I think, four ways. All right, I had a blue front and a white back, and you could turn around or have one side blue and white, and the tops were the same. And so I did some of everything. I sewed, make everything, make my girls' outfit, my dance group. I would make that dance outfit.
Mm-hmm. And did you attend all of the football games and where they would perform?
Oh, yes, indeed. Of course, our games, especially there, when I became a teacher there, I helped Sullivan, Mr. Ruff, with the financial end, because I would collect the money at the gate, sell the tickets and all of that. I always wanted to do my part. So I kept him with that, because if I didn't, you know, people get carried away when they see big bucks, take your money. So I handled the money.
I see. So let's talk about when you graduated, what were your parents' expectations for you, and what were you hoping to do after high school?
My mother didn't pay me any attention as far as academics was concerned. Somebody would say, but you know, Juanita so-and-so. Mama said, yeah, I know. She knew what had to be done. I was going to do it. I told you I was a belle when I graduated from high school. I was, summa cum laude when I came out of college. She was always down at the college and everywhere. She knew that I was going to always do my best. I was going to be like her. She was a smart lady, could do some of anything. Uh-huh. We were busy looking to see where I was going to school. And let me tell you how I chose Savannah. I was looking at the catalog. I wasn't going to pressure my mother. You know, children say, I want to go to FAMU and I want to go to these schools. How it would cost too much. All I wanted to do was go to school where they could afford it, because I knew from that point on, I was going to make it. Didn't matter where I went to school, I was going to make it. So my mother always knew that I was going to do what I was supposed to do, that I was going to be top notch in it. And when people would brag on me, she said, She never got carried away. She expected me to be the top of the line. Now, when you go get a car, you want the top of the line.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely.
Well, she knew that I was going to be the top of the line. And I guess that's what she expected always of me.
So why Savannah over, say, one of the schools in Atlanta?
I went to Savannah. The rate was low. And I knew that I wasn't putting them under any undue pressure. Back then, remember, they didn't give the scholarship. If they were given scholarships then, I would have had an 8-year scholarship, right?
Mm-hmm.
They weren't given scholarships. They give you $2 or $3. But I chose that. And I knew that, there were some people in Marietta who had gone to Savannah. And it was Jenny Hill was always down there. And it had a good reputation, so it was okay. It was just fine.
And how?
Very well there.
Did you live on campus?
Of course I did.
And how long were you there?
4 years. And I wrecked the campus while I was there. Why are you laughing?
Could you please elaborate?
Thing that I did to call me a wrecker?
Yeah, why did you wreck the campus?
One night, everybody was all laid out, you know, relaxing, sleep time for everybody to be in bed. I said, well, I guess it's about time for me to go pull this fire alarm. You know, they were taking showers and doing some everything, and I pulled the fire alarm, and they were running out of the dorm. The boys' dorm was right across the campus, and everybody was running out. And the dormitory matron saw me. She said, look, Francis Carter, I know you pull that asylum. They would know it, but they didn't see me, you know. And that's how I would always reckon something.
Mm-hmm. What do you think it was driving you to do that?
Oh, needed some excitement. We needed some excitement.
Mm-hmm. What did you do for fun in Savannah?
What did I do for fun?
Yes. I mean, did you go out? Did you go?
I had a gospel group. I could sing. I can sing a little bit. I had a gospel group, and we named it after the pastor. It was a little church right down off the campus. And we would go to church because I'm always going to be in church and sing. I had enough going for me to balance all those mischievous things that I did. I was in Alpha Kappa Mu National Honor Society, and I would have to leave the campus. And in fact, they made me the president of that area for the honor sorority. And I would go to meetings, what have you. I was told I was everywhere.
What did you study?
That I didn't do.
Tell me what you studied.
Oh, at Savannah?
Yes.
Oh, I was an English major. I did English. They didn't have library science because I love to read, and that's what I wanted. So I said, well, I'll do physical ed. And my French teacher said to me, she said, now, you know, when you leave here, when you go back to these little schools, they need a foreign language teacher. And she tutored me in French. That's how I was the French teacher. So when I went to Atlanta University, I got my certification in French. As a matter of fact, did you interview Wilson? Well, she's not a Wilson now. Because her mother was very popular in Marietta. And she had the nerve to go off and major in French, right? I did French and English and physical ed because the teacher just took it upon herself to tutor me. So I had all that I needed to teach French. Isn't that amazing?
It is. I mean, a lot of different sort of disciplines there, English, French, and physical ed. So your first job was in Monticello, is that right?
That's right, that was English. And so I think they made an opening for me at Lemon Street because that was my love. That school was my love. And that's when I taught the French and English and did the physical ed for them too.
So while you were teaching,
cheerleaders and help with the girls' basketball. What is that now?
So while you were teaching at Jasper County Training School, were you contacting the principal at Lemon Street to get back there?
Oh, no. Remember now, it was Mr. Wood and Ruff and whoever else. So they all knew me, and I'm sure they were working to get me back there. Okay. I didn't have to do very much. Like I said, Mr. Woods was my neighbor and Miss Catherine, his wife.
All right. How did you find out that you would be coming back to Lemon Street as a teacher?
Oh, I had applied anyway, and they didn't have the opening. That's why I said they probably created one. And I left Monticello. But you know, I liked it there. That first year of teaching paved the way for me. The principal lived next door to us. He would come over and make sure we were all right. The parents of those children on weekends, they would cook up food for us and bring it over to us. And they would say, now this is your meat for your sandwiches if you want to take a lunch to school. They were very kind to us. And we were young, remember?
Where were you living in Monticello? Mm-hmm. Were you living in some sort of like boarding house?
I could look right out of my front door into my classroom. We rented a house. There were four of us, two bedrooms with the twin beds in it. Jackie Hunter was my cut buddy. She's from Atlanta, Georgia. She's now deceased. And the four of us lived in our house next door to the principal.
I see.
So it's a family unit.
And
was at home with my family. Simon was cutting the fool in that class one day. I called his mother. And do you know she came down there with flour on her hand with her apron on, was in there rolling up her biscuits and whipped him all over that room. She said, now you go and hug her, and if I have to come back down here, I don't know what might happen to you. That's the kind of atmosphere I taught in. We had full support of our parents. They fed us, took care of us, everything. I loved it. I could have stayed there, but I have a passion for Lemon Street. All right.
So when you came back, tell me where your classroom was in the building when you were teaching back at Lemon Street.
What, at Lemon Street?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I said you go through the front door, come down the wide walkway, through those double doors. Well, it was double on one side and double on the other side. Take a left past the principal's office, and the first room there was my classroom. I told you I could look out my window and see everything was going on in the project.
So that were you in that room the whole time you were at Lemon Street?
Mm-hmm. That was my classroom. Mm-hmm.
And
unless I was down in the gym with my dance group with those legs kicking up in the air. And you asked what was extracurricular. I always had them participate in the dance contest over in Atlanta, Georgia, where they would go, and I knew they'd better take first place. Uh-huh. Busy as a bee.
Where did you live when you returned to Marietta?
Oh, at my parents. You know, I told you we lived up around the hill from the school and right in the corner from the teacher's home. I was in that little loop. Mm-hmm.
And how did you meet?
You just come up on Friday, said when you leave before you go home, come about and eat you some dinner. Hmm?
Tell me about meeting your husband at that time.
Oh, well, I tell you what, I'm a dancer. I told you I taught dance. I had a dance school. One of the activities in Marietta was news break. Okay, that's something. Okay, and they always gave us a street dance. They would block off the streets, and the people knew not to come out. This is for the school, for the young people. And of course, Dennis is very quiet, very docile, very kind, very sharp gentleman, okay? His friends in Cartersville all had girlfriends in Marietta. And remember, they were one of our teams that we played. Cartersville, Georgia. And so he decided to come down with the guys. I guess he wanted him a girlfriend in Marietta. And I was at the street dance out there doing my thing, dancing away. I had on some green jeans and a white blouse with red polka dots in. I remember that. I was dancing away. And he was over there with his arms crossed, staring at me. I said, what is he doing looking at me? Because I was too bad. I didn't have time to be fooled with these crazy boys. I said, I left Laureen Whitehead, who is now deceased, said, come on, Juanita, and go up here. I want to go up here and get me a soda or something. Charlie Hunter's. You ever hear about that? He had the restaurant in Marietta.
Ah, yes.
The Hunters, they were of the affluent Blacks. I said, girl, I can't go up there with you. I said, my daddy will murder me. She said, well, nobody out here but us. The Doves on out tonight. They open up everything just for us. I said, okay, I'll sneak on up there with you. I looked around and he was following me. We got in there. I had never been in there. I slid on that little stool. I thought I was real important that day, that night. And I sat there, and he came over and sat beside me. He said, what's your name? And that was it. That was the end of that. That was the end of that.
What age were you at that point?
I was 15, I guess.
So you kept up your
relationship. Almost 16, because that's about the time. That's right. Because I've been with him since I was 16.
And when did you marry?
Now I'm 83. Next month I'll be 84. How many years is that? And I was with him those 4 years before that, you know, when I was in college.
Right. So when did you marry him?
My senior year, that December, we were home for Christmas. And he said, let's get married. I said, you let me shit with my dad or something, you know. And my daddy said, I'm going to tell you, she spoiled you if you want her. He said, but don't you ever touch it, because you got the answer to me. You know, I thought I was a spoiled brat. Anyway, so that was it. We got married. That was in 57, because I graduated in 58, remember? And we got married that Christmas Eve. I called, we went and found a preacher. He was somewhere gallivanting in Marietta. Got Catherine Grady, Travia's mother, next door, come on up here. That was my godmother. Come on up here and stand up with me in front of the fireplace at my house. And went on and said, I do. And after we said, we do, I went on up to my aunt, who lived on the next street, and helped her put her children's Christmas toys together. That was it.
So tell me his name, his full name.
Whose full name?
Your husband.
His name is Dennis Reuben Carter.
So does he have the...
That's why my name is Frances Juanita Carter. Carter.
Well, what was your maiden name?
Carter. Carter. I said, man, that's why my name is Frances Juanita Carter. Carter.
I was going to ask about that.
And when we were all together, they would say, well, all of you Carters, because our families were very close. They visited each other. They would be down to my house, so we were up in Cartersville. We were always very close, the two Carter families.
Was he related, or were you related to Kenneth Carter and Jeannie?
Oh, no. Look, I would call them the affluent members of Marietta. Judge, oh, Ken, fine fella. You know, he's deceased now. His mother was a fine lady. The Cusford, did you meet any of them? The Cusford, he worked for the funeral home or something. His son just passed recently.
Oh, I see.
Did anybody bring up the Cusford?
Spell the name?
Cusford.
Cuthbert?
Uh-huh, Cusford.
No, I didn't meet them.
Oh, okay. Well, they were about the town. Well, in a place like Marietta, you knew everybody.
Well, let's talk to me about your the type of teacher you were, and the way that you mentioned a story about one of your students, how you disciplined them cleverly.
First of all, I'm a lot of fun, if you will. I'm a happy person, but I'm really strict about learning. I don't play with learning. It's significant to me. And my students knew that. And somehow that alone was a discipline. Did you not know that? If you're very stern and they realize how caring you are, that is a disciplining factor. Okay? So you said, how did I discipline? I'm going to relate something to you. After I retired from DC, I'm already old as dirt. And I came out here in Maryland. They needed teachers in middle school and applied. And they put me in a school and they gave me the worst children in the school. Middle school children are outrageous. And the principal could not believe their behavior, because I had the worst children in the school. He would come by And he would just look around, and he was so amazed at what was going on. When they took the test, those children of mine that they called the dumb ones, and I'll use that word because that's what they refer to those children in, scored very high. He could not believe it. It was all over Maryland, up in the, about the students at Charles Carroll Middle School. And you know what the students called me? The whole school.
What?
Grandma. Remember, I'm an old lady now in the junior high. They called me Grandma. They would pass by the high grandma. I'm going to be in your room next year. And they knew I was the meanest thing in the school. And the principal came in one day, and they were out there just working. Little fella raised, he said, Grandma, I need you to help me. Principal said, what did you call her? He said, I called her Grandma, you know, with a little hand on his side. He said, that's what we all call her. He looked at me, he said, he told me, didn't he? So I was Grandma, very strict. And they were all over me with my mean self. I'm a mean teacher. And I guess that was my mode for discipline. Now, this one that called me this yellow cross-eyed SOB, he was a good kid, came from a good family, and I knew that. So I just reprimanded him by, I said, sit down. I made him sit right up there in front of me so that I could explain what he had called me. And I said, yes, Mr. Bartlett, I think they call this complexion yellow. So you got an A on that, yellow. I said, you call me cross-eyed. Look at my right eye. I said, I was born with this cross-eyed, so I'm yellow and cross-eyed. I said, you call me that SOB? I said, that son of a, I said, I'm a female, so I can't be a son of a bitch. I said, because did you know that a bitch is a female dog? Okay, my mother is a female, but she's not a dog. I said, so you failed on those. I said, now, go back there to your seat and sit down. I'll square this up with your mother. She nearly killed him. And the class was so in stitches. They had their heads down because they knew if I saw them laugh, that was the end of them. But then after it was all over, I said, now you can laugh. They were so tickled. And they knew me. They didn't think that I would go crazy and act like a fool. We're supposed to have more sense than the students we teach. And from then on, I don't know what it like. He would come by and hug me all the time. But just fell in love with me. He learned a lesson. And teaching is about teaching what? A lesson. And it's not all subject matter. You agree with that?
Yes, absolutely.
What kind of student were you, Mr. Newberry?
I think I might have been a little bit like you.
And you know what? I had discerned about you. I think you are pretty bright. Am I right?
Well, maybe. I think so.
All right. You know that you are. And I know that you are. I already know that. And it's all right. I'm glad you know that you need to know to thyself be true. You're supposed to know who you are. But don't think that you're above everything, but be who you are. Okay, and don't mind saying who you are. Say, yes, I'm smart. Yes, I'm bright. Yes, I'm a good fella. Yes, my parents are proud of me. Okay, now I have to compliment you. Now, do you have another question?
I do. I think I can see why you were such a good teacher. Yeah. Made such an impact.
Uh-huh, and you know what? I love children. I love teaching with a passion. And let me tell you the secret of dealing with people, students, anybody, is let your love show. They knew that I loved them. My old big rusty dirty football players would come up there, leg hanging off, they've gotten broken up out on the field. They would say, "Doc, pray for me." We would get in that circle and pray. Okay? I did that in junior high. They were cutting the food one day. I said, "Come here." I said, "Get in the circle. We're going to pray." And one of my little girls, Bellamy, will never forget her. She said, "Grandma, I'm going to pray." When that little girl finished speaking, everybody was quiet. She was raised by her grandmother and she knew the power of prayer. But you got to let them know that you love them. And most of all, they knew I love the Lord. Don't mess with the Lord, okay? And that is the secret of getting along with people. They want to know why everybody like to come to your house. They like to come where love is. Do you know that, Mr. Newberry?
Yes. Well,
are you married?
I'm not currently, no.
Not currently, meaning?
No, I've never been married, no.
Would you like to be?
Well, certainly, it's a possibility.
Okay, if you're not ready to love wholeheartedly, leave it alone. Take that advice from me.
Well,
is that okay?
That's fine. And I do want to talk a little bit about, to sort of conclude the interview, I want to talk a little bit about your move to D.C. What took you and your husband to the D.C. area?
My husband is a caring man, as I told you. His uncle was ill up here. And seemingly when getting well, he said, "I'm going to see about Uncle Wallace." I said, "Okay." So he came up here to see about, at that time, he had an electrical company in Cartersville. So the other guy could take care of things while he came up here. And he got up here and was looking around, I think, and he kind of liked it. So he said, "What do you think about my moving here?" Because he went back home and got his little act together, because he let the guy take over the company, you know, buy his share. And he came back here. And I said, "Wait just a minute now. Lemon Street's going to lose me, because if they don't lose me, the way these women are, I'll lose him, because they're out here looking." I said, "Let me go up here and take care of my husband myself." I came here. Is that good?
That is. Where did you go to teach when you were in the D.C. area?
Oh, when I came here?
Yes.
For the first year and a half, I stayed at home. They said they didn't have any openings, and I knew better than that. So I said, "Well, maybe it's not time. Things are timed. You know that, don't you?"
Yes.
And of course, I was teaching Sunday school at my church. And Rosa Campbell, she said, "Francis, didn't you say you were a teacher?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, I want to know why you aren't teaching here." She said, "Honey, when I came in this class, it was about five of us. Now we're going to have to find another place to have class." You know, she saw the teaching skill, I guess. She told me, she said, "Go down and tell Mr. Kendrick that Rosa Campbell sent you down here." I said, "Well, do I have to call and make a move?" She said, "No, go and tell him I sent you." And that's what I did. And I had a job right away.
What was this school?
When the lady asked, "Do you have an appointment?" I said, "I would tell Mr. Kendrick when I see him." When he came out, I told him what Rosa Campbell, I said, "Miss Rosa Campbell told me to tell you she sent me down here for you to give me a job." He fell out laughing because she was so bloody, you know. She was one of those dynamite teachers too. And from that day on, was in D.C. No anything. Hmm?
What was the school called?
My first school was Gordon Junior High. And I walked in there trembling. Remember, I had come from this Black society. when I walked up in that school, it was all white. They were walking down one side, going down, and the other side coming up. The bell had rung. You couldn't hear a pin fall. And that's where he sent me. He said, I should send you over to Anacostia. That was under Black school. I said, well, why are you not sending her? He said, because they would throw you out the window. Now, it's the first time this man has met me. I said, why you say they would throw me out? He said, I'm just listening to you. He said, because you don't take any fluids. He said, I believe you can teach. I said, I don't know. I guess I can. And he said, I'm going to send you to Gordon Junior High School. I said, well, why Gordon? He said, that white man over there sent all of the Black folk back. I said, why are you sending me over there? He said, because he wouldn't dare send you back. Do you believe what I'm saying to you?
Oh, yes.
Mr. Newbear, do you believe what I'm telling you?
I do.
And he was right. He sent me over there. He said, he wouldn't dare send you back. He said, as soon as he interviews you and talk to you, he's not going to send you back. Okay. And I enjoyed that immensely. One of my girlfriends and I, we are tight, 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 like sisters. She was there. She was the French teacher there, Shirley Washington. And so that's where I started, at Gordon Junior High School.
And how long were you there?
I was there for 6 years, I believe, because you know how I left there?
How?
I was at a meeting, an English department meeting at H.D. Woodson Senior High, which was the top senior high in D.C. And this tall, dark, good-looking man walked out there. They said he was the principal, Nappy Lewis, Napoleon Bonaparte Lewis. So he came over there talking to us. I said, Mr. Lewis, do you have any openings over here? Because it was a fine school, had 8 floors, swimming pool, elevators, escalators, wood shop, auto mechanic shop, electric shop. The school had everything in it, okay? He said, well, what can you teach? I said, what you need me to teach? I can teach anything you need a teacher to teach. And that really tickled him, okay? He said, where are you now? I said, I'm at Gordon Junior High. Well, in September, when I went back to Gordon Junior High, I'm looking for my teacher box. I said, where is my box? Miss Manolata, she said, you're not over here, Carter. I said, where am I? I said, you fired me. She said, no, Mr. Lewis has requested you at Woodson Senior High. I didn't even have to transfer to do anything. The principal had done it. He didn't know anything about me. So that's where I ended my career, in D.C. I was there for, 22 years when Mr. Lewis decided I would have a job. He hadn't even interviewed me.
Wow.
He probably asked around about me.
Well, I only have 2 more questions.
Okay.
Tell me, how often do you return to Marietta? When there isn't a pandemic, how often would you make trips down?
I was there when my mother was alive, all during the year. Anytime I wanted to go see my mother, I was gone. All the holidays and everything, I told you, Marietta has been good to me. And I was always there. I would probably be right now because my niece's birthday is of Sunday. I was always in Marietta for all the homecoming. Mm. Oh, they knew I was going to be there. I used to speak at the homecoming. By the way, I was a public speaker. Used to speak at all the homecomings. Okay. Marietta Cobb homecoming. Okay. All the time I was there.
When you think, my last question is, when you think about the legacy of Lemon Street, what stands out to you? What's most important about Lemon Street?
Lemon Street made me, I would say that, made me the woman that I have, that I am. My association, the people with whom I work, the families there, the students, it's just my home after home. Lemon Street High, Lemon Street Elementary, when I think of my teachers, they're caring. Lemon Street was the place. And when they tore that building down, I'm about to cry. That old raggedy building broke my heart. Did I describe that building to you?
No, the wooden one?
Yeah. The senior high and the wooden one. I told you I can draw a picture of them. All right. The elementary school, the high school, I described it. Walk through the door to the left, go in the elementary school through that front door to the left with the first graders over there. Come right around the hall was Miss Thomas's room. There were two rooms on that side. Go around that. I can see the little teacher's name. Can't think of her name. I just loved it. Now, when does a teacher take a child home on the weekend? Like it's their child. They can't even do that now. They would claim something's wrong with the teacher or something, right? You think maybe?
I think it's possible. I think it was definitely a different time.
It was a wonderful time. Lemon Street High, and our parades would be just great. That Marietta Cobb homecoming was all about Lemon Street High, or Lemon Street Elementary. That's what it was about. And the people who started, I mean, my mother was the treasurer, Mrs. Scott, and my mother worked together with that money, Doc Christian, the sections, and they had it going, and I see it dying now. Those people who had a passion for it the way I do, and it's dying now.
Well,
so I'm so glad that they are refurbishing the school so that it can live on. It should never die. Lemon Street High, it was Perkinson High at first. Were you aware of that?
Right, yeah, until about 47, 48.
Yeah, it was Perkinson High. But Lemon Street, I'm glad that you're working with them. I don't want it to ever die. Just the memory.
I appreciate you answering all these questions so thoughtfully. And I'm going to end the recording here, and then we'll continue to chat a little bit.
Because I have to ask you a very serious question when we end the chat.
Okay, but thank you, Dr. Frances Juanita Carter.
You can call me Frances.
Thank you, Frances. We'll conclude there.
I love that. See, that means more to me than Dr. Frances Carter. Frances means that we are now friends. Okay?
I appreciate it.